You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
We get to talk history today, and this one is fascinating because we have such a gem right here in St. Louis with Concordia Historical Institute, and so we get to talk about some great history with Lutherans. Today's episode of The Coffee Hour is underwritten in part by Concordia University Irvine. You can learn more about Concordia University Irvine at cui.edu. Joining us today, the Reverend Dr. Daniel Harmelink. He's the Executive Director of Concordia Historical Institute. Dr. Harmelink, welcome back to the Coffee Hour.
It's great to be back. I brought some old dusty books, so maybe that's what's going on.
But they're in Portuguese. I'm so excited.
They're in Portuguese.
So there's a hint. Where are we going?
Portugal?
No. No. Brazil.
We're going to Brazil. So we get to talk about a great exhibit that's coming in August, open to the public August 11th.
Correct.
And you might be listening to this in August or September, but it's running August through February. Is that right?
August through February of 2026.
All right. Very good. So let's talk about the planning that goes behind creating an exhibit like this. What does that look like?
So again, CHI, we're all about not only preserving Lutheran history, but also sharing that with local people in the United States and around the world. So we have two museums. One is in the International Center here in Kirkwood, and that we update, but that doesn't change. And then the one on the campus of Concordia Seminary St. Louis, we try to change it like once a year or sometimes even more frequently, depending on how much time we have to prepare. So this exhibit on the mission history of Brazil, we're going to launch in August, but it's taken several months to get it ready. One of the things we had to do first is Robert Kolb said, all historical research begins with bibliography. So for the last several months, we've been asking ourselves, what historical touchstones or what evidence has survived in the last 150 years when it comes to Missouri Synod mission work in Brazil? And CHI, we've just got too much stuff. So it's kind of like, okay, CHI, Concordia Historical Institute, we have to kind of rediscover, okay, what's available? And some things have been lost, both at CHI and also in our sister church body in Brazil. I mean, it's not only Missouri that has floods and damage and things are misplaced or whatever, but, you know, also Brazil. So this is a fantastic opportunity to work with a sister church body, the archives in Porto Alegre, which is the kind of the hub of confessional Lutheran church work in Brazil, and say, how can we honor the saints that have gone before, to reach out to people who had no pastor, no congregation, no Lutheran resources to strengthen their faith, to a church body that's thriving today in Brazil. It's amazing what Christ has done over the last 150 years there.
Yeah, I'm very excited for this exhibit, for all of the history that's going to be in there. What are some of the most exciting things to look forward to in this exhibit?
Well, I think there's several takeaways. I think maybe one of the most immediate things is I brought with me this chronicle of the Lutheran Church in Brazil, and it's a pictorial directory of all the pastors and teachers over the last several decades. And one of the striking things that you see immediately is that the family names of the Lutherans in Brazil, they're the family names of many of the people in the Missouri Synod. So I think the most striking one is Leyenbauer. Maybe you haven't heard that family name before, but it's prominent in Missouri Synod leadership and also in Brazil leadership. So one of the kind of parallel things that we're doing at Concordia Historical Institute is we're releasing for the first time in 103 years, this, it's kind of a diary or it's kind of memoirs of Albert Leyenbauer, who was in Brazil, published this in Germany, not in the United States, but published this in 1923, his exploits in this wilderness of Brazil. It's called Roughing It for Christ in the Wilds of Brazil. Again, it's kind of like the Old West, but in Brazil. So, you know, we have cowboys. Brazil's got cowboys. And a lot of these pastors/missionaries, didn't get around on the train, didn't get around in a car. It was either a mule or walking, or if they were, you know, if they had fantastic resources, they had a horse. And they were circuit riders to all of these people who had immigrated to Brazil and settled in these remote, hard-to-reach places, and they're crying out for the gospel. It's an amazing story, and I think that's a exciting thing that's reflected in our presentation, is these brave, courageous pastors and teachers that went from St. Louis or the seminary, which was then not in Fort Wayne, but in Springfield. Often their first call was, you're going to Brazil. So if you've ever been at a call service at one of the seminaries, you hear these gasps when people hear where they've been called. But just imagine in 1910 or 1915 or 1920, getting a call to Brazil. Amazing.
Yeah.
It would take months to get there. So
what else do we know about the early missionaries who went to their early Lutheran missionaries who went to Brazil? You said many of them were coming from the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod. Were there missionaries coming from other places that we know about as well?
Well, it's interesting. These German immigrants came in mass from not only Germany, but also later day Poland, Russia. They came, but no one thought through, hey, in this new country, we're going to need pastors, right? We're going to need servant leaders to strengthen our faith and to teach our kids and to continue this Lutheran faith. So they got there. And then, unfortunately, this is part of the history, is there were individuals who said that they were pastors, Lutheran pastors, but actually were dishonest and just tried to trick people into thinking that they were Lutheran pastors. So the spiritual care in this new country for these immigrants was terrible or even worse. So yeah, they put out calls to Europe, but it's like no one came. So some of the first pastors that came were people who heard about the dire situation of the Lutherans in Brazil and came from places like Baltimore, like Nebraska, like St. Louis. And they went, they heeded the call and went down to Brazil and tried to help out. But I think they too were overwhelmed with the challenges, so many of the challenges that Lutheran Christians faced in Brazil. Again, it's a wilderness, right? Mm-hmm. And up until, I think, the early 1900s, Roman Catholicism is the official denomination or the official religion of the state. So not only do you have challenges in communication, transportation, geography, but you have others, including local and the state government, putting restrictions on what Lutheran missionaries or pastors could do. Tough.
Yeah. Were there other challenges that not only the immigrants, but also the missionaries faced as they were just settling in the land?
I think so. Again, I think the geography that, you know, everyone's so spread out. So when these immigrants came, they were given a chunk of land and a couple goats and okay, well, off you go and you're on your own. So just by the nature of the immigration, one of the challenges of the missionary pastor is to, how do I gather these people together? You know, otherwise you're on your mule or your donkey or you're walking or trying to ford the streams or whatever, more than you are actually doing ministry. So the kind of the dispersion was, I think, a huge challenge. And we see the same thing. The second president of the Lutheran Church, Winneken, one of his challenges early in ministry was just going out into the hinterlands and trying to gather people that he may see only once a year. And the same conditions are happening in Brazil. So talk about challenging work. It's very easily could be, you know, nothing good's coming from this. But they continued, and some people saw fruit.
You may have shared this. Forgive me if I missed it. What are the dates like that we're looking at when the mission work in Brazil began?
So the German immigrants came in like 1840s, 1850s, 1860s. And then pastors from North America start coming down in the late 1800s. to the point that the Missouri Synod officially in their conventions designates, okay, we got to do something with this dire situation in Brazil in the 1880s, 1890s.
And how did the Missouri Synod understand this, the group of Lutherans in and the work that was happening in Brazil? Was it a mission field? How did they perceive that?
It's very interesting that it wasn't the Board of Foreign Missions that took over this work in Brazil or designated resources for that. It was the Board of Intermissions. I think Missouri Synod people or Missouri Synod Lutherans in North America saw this as reaching out to our distant cousins in Brazil. It was family. And I think that whole thing has been lost, at least that I'm aware of, in the Missouri Synod today. We've forgotten that we have extended family in Brazil. Now they've you know, they're now Portuguese speaking and we're no longer German speaking, right? But the connection continues. So if you draw out the family tree of Missouri Synod, I mean, Lutherans in Brazil are part of that family. So it's intermissions. It's kind of like how do we help out our brethren in Brazil instead of we're going to people who don't have never heard the gospel or whatever. It's not that situation. You know, in China, our history is rich there as far as outreach to China or Nigeria or India, Papua New Guinea. Brazil is a different thing. Mm-hmm. It's a different category.
We're talking with Reverend Dr. Daniel Harmelink, Executive Director of Concordia Historical Institute, about an upcoming exhibit at Concordia Historical Institute here in St. Louis. But we'll also talk about where there might be other opportunities to catch the exhibit as well. You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
The Concordia University System is comprised of five universities of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Located across the United States, the universities offer more than 160 undergraduate and 50 graduate programs and approach learning from a Lutheran context with the goal of developing Christian leaders for the church, community, and the world. Learn more about your Concordia University System at cus.edu. The Concordia University System, education built on God's Word. cus.edu.
Welcome back to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
We're talking with Reverend Dr. Daniel Harmelink, Executive Director of Concordia Historical Institute, about an upcoming exhibit on Lutherans in Brazil. So we've gone back to the late 1800s, working our way into the early 1900s. How did those who were going as missionaries to serve in Brazil from the U.S., from the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, how were they supported? You know, I think of how we're structured now and mission network support, how missionaries, you know, go around and visit congregations to gather support. And I mean, we have the blessing of the internet to stay connected while they're out in the field. What was it like for missionaries then? How did they have support to be in the field?
Well, I think it was a kind of, you know, kind of all hands on deck, or it was a plethora of different sources. So not only in convention, again, you know, in Missouri Synod is everything in convention. So they would make these resolutions that we're going to designate money to support pastors and teachers that are being sent to Brazil. But also, it's interesting, LWML just had their convention in Omaha. And it's interesting, those archives, that history is housed at Concordia Historical Institute. And it's interesting, there's boxes and boxes of LWML Brazil District in HI. So LWML, you know, they do a lot of fantastic things. And one is raising money for mission work. There was also LWML was behind this. We have to support our family in Brazil. The Walther League, I don't know, older people will remember that. I joked that it was the unofficial dating service of the Missouri Synod for a while. The Walther League exploded in Brazil. There it was called Walther Liga, and hundreds of youth were organized under the Walther League banner. Then you have, like the Leyenbauer Journal, you have missionaries who are writing about their life And these are published in either Lutheran Witness or Der Lutheraner, the German publication, asking for prayers and support. But I think the major impetus is we need to send people. It is the first person that went down there to survey, the first 26 congregations that he visited in Brazil, none of them had a pastor. So we bemoan the fact that there are so many congregations today in LCMS that don't have a pastor. But this was even worse. This was even more dire. And so Missouri Synod, and in North America too. So I think Missouri Synod said, this is a priority. And they even, you know, cut corners here so that opportunities would be available in Brazil. And again, you know, you've got the Depression, you've got World War I. There are plenty of other problems going on. But this concern or this love for the Christians in Brazil, it continues even through that.
What was that maturity of the mission work for the Lutheran Church in Brazil to mature, to become an independent church body?
Well, it seems that they were just stubborn as far as, again, I think that's a Missouri Synod trait too, but it's so. This we're going to continue, you know, a faith in the gospel that despite all of these challenges, despite incredible setbacks, despite such meager resources, they say, we're going to continue. And that's amazing. And that's, you know, that's God-given faith at work because, yeah, you read these accounts and it's like, it didn't go anywhere, right? You've got the linguistic challenges too, that, you know, these first German or Lutheran immigrants were German speakers. And then again, because of World War I and other factors, it was like an overnight change, not to English, but to Portuguese. So the church took up that challenge. Another resource that was Missouri Synod helped plant was a publishing house. So if you go to Concordia, to Brazil, and you say, yeah, we have Concordia Publish House, Brazil Lutherans will say, we have one too. But overnight, the government leaders in the community came, burned all the German books, and the government threatened no more German publishing at all. No more speaking German from the pulpits, all of this. And, you know, we had some parallels like that. But it, again, more dire circumstances. And Concordia Publishing House in Brazil met that challenge and said, no, we're going to move forward despite these overwhelming odds.
So the exhibit, Lutherans in Brazil, that's coming up August 11th through February of 2026. What will we find in the exhibit?
So we begin with a kind of a big map that was done in 1900 of Brazil. And it's interesting, it's from Germany. So a lot of the place names have changed. And we see the same thing in the United States. You know, you talk about Horse Prairie, people don't know, or Red Bud or something. People don't know what that is anymore. So it's kind of like help the viewer get oriented as far as, okay, where is Brazil? Is that in Asia? You know, so we have a map, and then you'll see this big picture of a missionary pastor being installed in one of these preaching stations in the wilderness of Brazil. The people, they decorated for this special occasion the best they could, and that is to decorate their barn. Again, maybe they didn't even have a house yet. It's kind of like we have the same thing. You know, in a congregation, the first thing they build is a school. They don't build a church, they build a school. And so you see this palm decorated inside of a barn where this pastor is installed as their new pastor. And the family doesn't even have shoes. So that's kind of the first image. And then we have all kinds of photographs, either kind of a slideshow kind of presentation on a screen or on kind of stations, banners that are 12 stations. And we try to walk through, okay, the prehistory of what was Brazil going through before Lutherans showed up on the scene and how, despite these incredible and constant challenges, Christ is gracious and he begins. Again, it's like we say, the Holy Spirit creates and sustains faith when and where he pleases. And you see a lot of that in the history of mission work in Brazil. I think the exhibit cuts off at like 1945. There's so much that we can't show at all. But the first 120 years of German Lutherans or Lutherans in Brazil. You get a kind of a panorama. And hopefully, you know, the prayer is that this will help, will instill in people a desire to learn more about not just Lutherans in Brazil, but what gracious, merciful things Christ has done in this incredibly rich history in Brazil.
How is this history being celebrated in other parts of the world?
So we're excited that this digitizing of hundreds and hundreds of photographs of mission work in Brazil, rediscovering some of the details about this history, will also be kind of replicated or be in some ways duplicated both in Latin America and in Brazil itself. The seminary, again, you say Concordia Seminary, there's Concordia Seminary Brazil. They are getting ready for an exhibit, a kind of a parallel exhibit later in the year. And in the Dominican Republic, where there is a seminary also that is training pastors for all of Latin America, they just began an exhibit on the same theme that we're celebrating here in St. Louis after August 11th. So we're excited. And again, CHI, we're looking for new opportunities to kind of share this. There will also be online resources because, again, we always get phone calls. It's like, I don't drive anymore and I'm not in the St. Louis area. What do I do? So we have a photo gallery. If you go to the CHI website, we have a photo gallery. Already, we have 15,000 photographs of mission work in India. We're going to add hundreds of mission work in Japan. And we're also going to put these photographs, these fantastic photographs, online so that people can search and identify. That's my great-great-grandfather, or he's got the same family name. I wonder if there's a connection, that kind of thing, online.
You mentioned hundreds of photos for this exhibit. How do you go about curating photos for an exhibit like this?
I'm on medication. The thing is, again, we get this all the time. People come in with a shoebox and they say, oh, these are old photographs of a congregation. I don't know much about it, but here you go. And then we open up the box and there's no information on these photos. So it's like, it just says Trinity. Well, that's a lot of hell, you know?
That narrows it down.
How many Lutheran churches are there in the United States? And no. So you know, this information that needs to be linked to these photographs, that makes it valuable. That's what makes it a rich and a learning thing. So that took months and months and months and months and months. And we're still doing this crowdsourcing, you know, where you put up a photograph and you say, we don't know much about this. Can anyone help us? Because some of this history, it's just been up to this point, it's just a big question mark. But again, we've got fantastic partners in Brazil, and we're calling on like retired missionaries that had some experience in Brazil or Argentina, or help us out. Because again, just where location or who are these people, or do you have any idea when and what was the occasion? That takes just a regular old, it's an old photograph, and turns it into a treasure. So we're constantly about that. But just to preserve an old photo, it's like, okay, we'll put it in the just old photo box. So yeah, come and read some of these details. It's amazing and really brings life to the photograph.
Yeah. I love looking at old photos. It's really fun, especially when they have captions on them. So
well,
you know
now
they
there's
are.
This AI that promises to take an old photo and make it come alive or make it into a video. I think CHI is there yet. But but again, for me, it's the tell me the story behind the photo is the thing that makes it alive.
Yeah.
So we're constantly doing that, you know.
Any tips or tricks for families who want to attend when this is open August 11th through February 2026?
Sure. So coming into the exhibit, again, it would be good if you want to do a little prep as far as, okay, where is Brazil on the map? Maybe talk about, you know, it's not all of Latin America is Spanish speaking, it's Portuguese, but also maybe a little prep as far as immigrants from the old Luther lands in Europe. It was not only to Missouri, it was not only to Pennsylvania or Wisconsin or Michigan, but it was also to Latin America too. But we'll try to help you with that too. We have a few banners as far as what was going on before stuff was going on. But no, it's family friendly, and we just ask if you've got 16 kids, give us a call so that we can make sure that we'll clear out the space so we'll have enough room for you. But come.
Where can we find more details about Concordia Historical Institute and this upcoming exhibit?
So our website is Concordia Historical Institute, all one word, concordiahistoricalinstitute.org. Or you can give us a call. We're on the campus of the Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. We're the first building on the left as you come in. Monday through Friday, let's say 9 o'clock to 3 o'clock Monday through Friday, we would love to give you a tour. It's amazing. And again, it'll be up until middle of February of next year. But don't wait, because something will come up and then you'll say, oh, I missed that one too.
So this is open August 11th to the public. And again, you'll have the opportunity to see that until the middle of February. So don't want to wait until then, though.
We might even have like a one-page quiz for the kids.
How about a two-page quiz for Sarah?
Yes, please.
Sounds good.
In Portuguese. I'm learning Portuguese, so this is really fun.
Excellent.
ConcordiaHistoricalInstitute.org is where you can find more information. Our guest today, the Reverend Dr. Daniel Harmelink, Executive Director of Concordia Historical Institute. Thank you so much for being our guest on the Coffee Hour.
Thanks for the opportunity. Blessings on the day.
You've been listening to the Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
The Coffee Hour with Andy and Sarah is a production of KFUO. To support the Coffee Hour and KFUO Radio, visit KFUO.org. You can also text KFUO to 41444 or send an email to gifts@KFUO.org. And you can call us at 800-844-0524. KFUO. Christ for you, anytime, anywhere.